Hey everybody, welcome to the Wednesday Conversation, the 2018 edition. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with my friends, Pastor Bob, Pastor Dusty of Coramdale Church, and Pastor Chris from First City Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, Bob, what are we talking about today?
Well, before I introduce the topic,
I want to
correct your intro.
Oh, yeah.
In the past, we sat down every Wednesday to talk about how the gospel connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. But in 2018, we're going to sit down one Wednesday a month.
That's right.
This podcast is changing, starting now, to be monthly rather than weekly. Why, listener? Well, because we feel like, one, we want to give more time to less content. So we want to hone in on less subjects and give them a little more thorough build out. And number two, we just feel like that's actually the best way to serve both our listeners and our church. Honestly, doing a podcast every single week can sometimes pull us away from other things we should be doing. Doing one once a month feels like we can give it the time, focus, and energy we need to while also serving our church well. So this is the first of what will become monthly Wednesday Conversation podcasts. In general, these will release on the first Wednesday of each month, except for the month of January, since the first week was a holiday week. This one will be releasing the second week of January. But from now on, the first Wednesday of the month, you'll find the new Wednesday Conversation podcast in your podcast feed. As always, we want to invite you to give your feedback on that and to suggest topics. We've always invited you to do that, but especially now that we're only doing 12 episodes in 2018, we really want to prioritize the sort of topics and questions that our listeners care most about. As we look back on the last 52 weeks, there's been some podcasts that have been really front and center and meaningful to people. There's been other ones we feel like, I'm glad we talked about that, but it didn't seem to hit as much of a nerve, didn't seem to serve quite as well. And so feel free to give your feedback. I want to start this podcast, before we even get to our topic, with just 5 minutes on what the Wednesday Conversation is and isn't. Because I feel like the Wednesday Conversation, what is it really? What function is it to serve? Because if you don't understand that as a listener, then you probably are going to miss what we're trying to do here.
We've destroyed a lot of people's expectations.
I think we really have. That's good.
Broke
That's
their
good.
Heart a few times. But.
So... Here's what happened. As you know, I missed a lot of Wednesday conversations at the end of last year.
Yeah.
You guys were sort of
carrying the water
without me. Well, thank you. One of those trips, I went out to Boston and served some church planters and leaders out there. And here's what was fascinating is all those guys listened to the Wednesday Conversation. They were asking me questions about like, hey, you guys have a great podcast. And here's what you talked about this. And here's what I wanted to know. And so it really made me thankful that there's a broad listenership out there that listens to the Wednesday Conversation. We've got a lot of subscribers, not only around the country, but around the world. But the funny thing about that is we really started this podcast as just a vehicle to use within our own city and churches to just talk about stuff. So it's sort of one of those, like, if overhearing this podcast is helpful to you, then great. But we're not trying to like make a podcast that the whole world listens to. We're just trying to be faithful pastors and shepherds in our own context. And hopefully that is meaningful to other people who are trying to do similar things. I also found out there that those guys were asking me questions like, hey, so how do you guys prep for the Wednesday Conversation? Like, how much reading do you do beforehand? And I sort of laughed like, oh, well, you guys don't quite understand how this works. It sort of impressed me, though, that we come off as though we've done that much prep.
It's probably the editing.
It is. Yeah. Bethany makes us much more erudite than we really are. But so let me talk about three things. Let's set the record straight by let me give you three things you must understand about the Wednesday Conversation. Number one, the format. This podcast is entirely unscripted. That's why we call it the Wednesday Conversation.
You should hear the outtakes.
Because that's actually what it is. We sit down around the table, we turn on the mics, and we just talk. And that's what makes it fun. It's not scripted. It's not, here's what we're going to come in and say, I'll say this and you say that. It's just a conversation. So it's entirely unscripted. There is very little prep other than just the sort of reading and interaction that we're doing throughout a normal week that goes into this podcast. Second, the content. How do we decide what we talk about here? Well, this is where I just sort of get to exercise my freedom as a leader. It's kind of whatever I feel like talking about, stuff that interests me or us. It's an attempt at thoughtful dialogue. And what you need to understand about the Wednesday Conversation is it's intended to be a first word, not a last word. So sometimes people are like, I can't believe you said that on the podcast, or you came down in this place. I'm just like, hey, you know what? we're not saying every Christian in the world needs to agree with this point of view. We're trying to stimulate thought and conversation about what it means to apply the gospel to everyday life. And so it's different than a sermon where we're trying to deliver authoritative truth. We're actually just sort of doing gospel intuition here. We're saying, here's how the gospel gives some flavor and some color to things that are going on in the world. It's really a chance for us around the table to talk about stuff that we're not going to preach sermons about, stuff that's going on in the culture, stuff we're reading in magazines, stuff that's being talked about in the city around us. It's those kind of topics. So the content is very much just sort of overflow of things that we find ourselves interested in. Third, the contributors. Why are these particular people around the table? Why is it Mike and Chris and Dusty and myself? Well, again, that just overflows out of, here's the people I regularly talk with anyway. Here's the people I sort of like chopping it up about these kinds of topics with. And so these guys are just conversation partners I appreciate. We also love to bring guests in. And as you know, we often bring people in to join the conversation. However, we're not aiming for like an exact balance of divergent viewpoints or even of like men, women, or majority, minority cultural representation. We're just saying, these are three guys I'd like to talk to anyway. And so that's sort of how we got to these conversation partners. So we do and will continue to have people join this conversation as much as it's fruitful to do so and as much as we can. But there's no rhyme or reason to like, why is it us? Other than we talk about these things anyway. And so we turn on the mics and talk about them together with you. So that's what the Wednesday conversation is. I hope that helps to shape your expectations a little bit, knowing that we are four church leaders leading in a particular context in the middle of the United States and trying to offer helpful gospel intuition and insight on various things going on in the world around us. Hopefully that helps you sort of listen well and listen rightly to what we're doing here.
That was helpful for me just to know why I'm here.
There you go.
Yeah. You ask yourself that.
I do.
A lot.
So here's our topic for this week, Mike. Should we keep the term evangelical, or is that term no longer useful in the North American context? This is a conversation I've been having recently with some friends from around the country. I have some pastor friends I get together with a couple times a year. We had a robust disagreement about this last time we were together. Not only that, but there are multiple voices talking about this in the broader culture. There have been articles in the New York Times, articles in the Wall Street Journal, articles on NPR. About the question of, is the term evangelical helpful or not helpful? What has become of this term in the wake of especially 2016 and Donald Trump? And so we just wanted to chop it up today or this month about the question, what do we do with this word evangelical? Is it still a helpful and healthy word by which we should sort of identify the tribe that we find ourselves in? Or has it become so unhelpful that we should jettison it? What we've done to prepare for this podcast, in spite of what I just said that we don't prepare, I did send around a set of about 8 different links to various articles that I've already mentioned, New York Times, Christianity Today, NPR, Wall Street Journal, of various people giving their perspective on this. This has been a hot topic over the past 6 months or so. And so that's the sort of background reading that's going to influence this conversation, is what various people are saying about this. Guys, let's start off with just introductory reflections. What do you guys think? Is the term evangelical still useful? What do you feel about it? What are your intuitions about it coming out of the last 12 months?
I like the term in like a historical sense. So like knowing what evangelicalism is and knowing its history and its roots, I think in that regard, it's a helpful term to know. I land differently on do I label myself as an evangelical in how major media defines it.
I'm beginning to wonder if it's a similar term to like a denomination like Lutheran or Presbyterian or Methodist, that you have such variety within those denominations and groups.
That it's not that helpful.
That you still have to clarify what you mean. It may kind of get you in the ballpark as to a range of things that it could mean. But it doesn't necessarily precisely describe things like it maybe used to. So that's my, just like with each of these denominations, they used to be much more precise. So that's kind of where I am right now. And I may go somewhere very different by the end of this conversation.
I think about right away, the postmodern evangelical book by Weber. And so right away, I start getting a little itchy about the term. But all of that being said, I think I always go to, well, it's an established term. So if you don't have something like that defining you, what is defining you?
Love it. I'm with you, Mike. I like the historical background of this term. My conviction is this is a word that's been stolen from us by the political pollsters, and I sort of want to fight to take it back. Meaning, I feel like this term has been redefined in ways that are unhelpful, and rather than jettisoning it, I want to fight to sort of redefine it. Now, there's some people who are saying that's just a losing battle, so I'm open to that. But I want to fight for not giving up the term, mainly because my question is, well, what do we replace it with? Even to your point, Chris, even if it has become so broad of a term that it's not actually that helpful, I just don't know. Okay, well, if we're gonna try to describe this tribe of Christianity that we find ourselves in, what other word is there? I haven't heard any good proposals for that yet in anything I've read or in anything that's been said.
So, what do you feel like the need for that definition? Why? So you say, okay, we have a tribe, evangelical as a tribe, and it kind of brings definition. Why do you feel like the bounds of definition that creates is needed and necessary?
Well, and here's what's funny is as I was having this argument with my pastor friends from around the country, they asked me the question, do you have that word on Quorumdale's website anywhere? And I said, I don't think so, actually. And they were like, well, then why are we fighting for it? Like, why does it matter? Because actually, if you were asking me, and if I'm even thinking about how do we try to describe who we are in the city of Omaha, we use words like historically Christian,
Orthodox,
Bible-believing, right? Gospel-centered. We try to use terms that have a little bit more historical underpinning because, yeah, evangelical is a fractured term and a fractious term. So to your point, Chris, it's funny to me that though I want to fight to keep the word, I don't actually use it in especially how we frame ourselves to the broader culture.
And when did evangelical become like a catchphrase? Wasn't it in the 70s and 80s?
Okay, so let me give the backstory there because it's actually quite interesting. In the 1920s in America, you had the break between in the mainline Protestant tradition between liberals and fundamentalists. Hmm. Now, in some ways, those terms are sort of backward looking in history, because I don't know that at that moment they all would have lined up in the liberal or fundamentalist camp. But basically what you had was the liberal tradition sort of jettisoning the authority of scripture, and a number of key figures in the 1920s sort of rallying around what they called the fundamentals of the faith, one of which was the authority of scripture. Now, quickly what happened in the 1930s and 40s was that fundamentalist strain, which had been like the sort of classic picture of this is J. Gresham Machen, who's a Princeton Seminary guy, very erudite East Coast Presbyterian scholar, who he wanted to say, I'm not going to call myself a fundamentalist because I'm not going to let you put me in that camp, but I'm also not going to let the liberals have all the institutions and say that they're reflecting mainstream Christianity. Actually, they're the ones that have left the fold. You know, let's call them something different. I'm just a Christian, right? Ultimately, that play didn't work because there were a lot of other people culturally who, though they agreed with sort of Machen and his viewpoint, they were sort of culturally, I would call them like put your head in the sand kind of people. Of just like, let's just sort of rally around together and isolate ourselves from the culture. And so fundamentalism came to have this what would you call it, culturally protective or isolated or sort of like, I don't want to interact with the world around
sectarian.
Me. Sectarian. Yeah. So in the 1950s, Billy Graham, Carl F.H. Henry, and some others basically created the word evangelical. Mm-hmm. They said, we don't want to use the label fundamentalist anymore because it's become a label that implies a certain theology of culture. It implies that we are against culture, that we are threatened by culture. So they sort of created this, they carved out this niche called evangelicalism that primarily was shaped around the founding of Christianity Today, the magazine, the Billy Graham Evangelistic Organization, and a number of sort of other forms of what would you call it? Like public leadership in the culture.
Like religious platform.
Yeah, yeah. I won't call them institutions because I don't think of a magazine so much as an institution, but just ways of having a voice in the culture. And so the term evangelical started in about the 1950s. I mean, it has, obviously it goes back to the Greek language, so it doesn't, you know, the adjective evangelical probably would have been used throughout church history to just describe people who believe in the gospel. But it became a real strong term in America after the 1950s. Here's what I learned in the reading is it was not used by political pollsters until 1976. In the 1976 election, because Jimmy Carter positioned himself as a born-again Christian, pollsters started asking people, would you identify as an evangelical Christian? And so in 1976, the term sort of began to be politicized. And since then, it's sort of gone in a real unhealthy direction in political terms because, and this is the fascinating thing about many of the articles that we read for this podcast, a lot of people are saying the way pollsters use the term evangelical is just not helpful because basically they're calling you on the phone and saying, you know, hi, I'm taking a poll today. Would you identify yourself as an evangelical? And if your answer is yes, they're just going to take your word for it. They don't have any other criteria for what does that word mean. And so, for instance, Ed Stetzer is arguing we have to give theological content to the word evangelical and not let it just be a political term like, you know, would you label yourself as a conservative or as a liberal or, you know, all the other mushy terms that we use in the world. So I'm saying all that to say I really, as a leader and as a Christian in America, value being connected to the tradition that goes back to Billy Graham, Carl Henry, Harold John Oakengay, some of those key mid-century leaders. And I don't like jettisoning a term that connects me to that. But what's happened is I feel like that word now has sort of been co-opted by certain political commentators and, you know, policymakers and pollsters and such in a way that what's happened is the rest of the world around me hears the word evangelical as something that's not what I hear it as, if that makes sense.
So yeah. If I understand you correctly, what you're saying is that some of the problem has been how those outside of evangelicalism have co-opted the term or started to...
Yes.
So it's not actually the problem within... Because a lot of... I mean, some of these articles we read were pointing to, hey, there's a problem within... The way evangelicalism has started to take shape, especially in the last 20 years, is the problem. It's latched onto a certain political platform or
yes.
certain you know racial undertones as well, and so it's actually the problem is more internal rather than external. But you see maybe more of the problem coming from the outside and the way it's been co-opted there.
Well, I just think it's a problem of language, right? The challenge with any language is it has both a denotated and a connotated meaning, right? The denotated is what did the dictionary say this means? So evangelical denotation is from the Greek word evangel, which means good news. And so evangelical in the dictionary definition means someone who believes the good news of the gospel. The connotation is what becomes problematic. And so, yeah, I'm suggesting the connotation certainly has both internal and external factors. There are ways that the ways people who call themselves evangelicals have acted and lived in the world over the last 40 years has been a real problem. There's also an externally imposed connotation that I think comes from primarily hostile cultural forces that just don't understand what even the word is that they're using. I mean, even here's what's fascinating to me is even NPR, which I do not consider to be either conservative or super friendly toward an evangelicalish Christianity, says in their reporting on this, they say, depending on the mode of measurement, more than one third of Americans are evangelical. Or fewer than 1 in 10 are. So they're even acknowledging, depending on how you define the word, it's either a third of America or less than 10% of America that is evangelical. And so they're tapping into the fact that there's a word usage problem here. The word can mean different things depending on how you frame it. And so I am suggesting that some of how it's been framed is a problem external to our tribe. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, is the term evangelical in danger of going the same way of the word fundamentalist, where you have certain theological convictions that get swallowed by the cultural aspect of it, and eventually the term becomes unhelpful? Because even today, you know, to call someone a fundamentalist is actually you're kind of derogatory. Like, hey, stop being a fundamentalist.
Stop being a fundamentalist.
Yeah. So is the term headed that direction because of the cultural and political baggage that it's picked up?
That's the live question that I don't know the answer to. And I think what I'm suggesting is, and this was the argument I had with my friends at this pizza parlor when we were sitting around a few months ago, I said, well, I don't want us to just give up the fight. Because I think if convictional theological evangelicals start running from the word, well, then yeah, it probably is going that direction. But I'm saying, I think it's too early for us to be doing that. Despite all that's happened in the last few years surrounding that word, I think there's actually a chance for us to fight for the real meaning of the word evangelical and sort of the robust theological vision of what that means. Now, I don't know, that could be a losing battle. So I'm saying I could be fighting a fight that's not worth fighting here. But to me, it feels like I'm not sure I'm ready to give that word up. And again, it's primarily just because I don't know what else you go to that connotes the same thing in both the American historical context and in the sort of theological world.
If the word has already been hijacked into the political realm, wouldn't it be easier to let the word go so that you have to get a layer deeper to, I'm an Orthodox Christian who,
sure,
you know, things like that.
Yeah. But again, let the, like, when we say things like, wouldn't it be easier to let the word go? It sounds like it's just easy. Like, well, let's stop calling ourselves that. I'm saying the people across the street from you are still going to call you that when they find out, oh, you go to a church that believes the Bible, believes that Jesus actually rose from the dead. And, has a conservative view of sexuality. Oh, well, so you're an evangelical.
Maybe, like, not, though. I think they might call me a Christian. I think if we start talking politics, then, okay, then they might call me.
Yeah, yeah, that's what's interesting, is it's become more of a, it's like almost become more of a political word than a
yeah,
church word.
Yeah, and that's where, like, so teasing some of these things out for me is why do people associate a high view of the Bible, conservative view of sexuality, you know, kind of the things, the theological things, jump to Republican? You're probably Republican. And because of the supposed voting data, right, that 80% of evangelicals voted for Trump, or they typically vote Republican.
Yes.
So it is an interesting—
80% of self-described,
right,
people,
right,
who would line themselves up in that camp, regardless, yeah, of whether I would claim them as part of my tribe. That's
right,
the challenge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because, I mean, there's been some great analysis of that data to show, even if you start to break down the difference between those who attend church like three or four times a month versus, you know, once a month or a couple times a year, even though they all label themselves evangelical, the differences in voting patterns there. So there is definitely problems with the broad brush that is painted within how pollsters view the evangelical world. But my question is, it does seem, though, that there is a connection between the theological convictions and a particular drift towards a political party. And my argument would be that largely has to do with social issues. I mean, I think there,
sure,
are some economic,
yeah, sure,
issues,
sure,
there too, but largely being abortion. And this is something a couple people have pointed out that I think is super important, is that you wouldn't have the same problem of just this whole-scale association of evangelicals with the Republican Party if the Democrat Party wasn't so hostile to pro-life.
Right.
And so you have these other underlying issues going on here that I think you have to kind of bring into the table of why the baggage is there. And some of that baggage shouldn't necessarily be put on this evangelicals as a that we have kind of compromised, or there's a decline, or whatever you want to call it, but that in some ways we've been forced into a corner culturally and politically because of the way some political parties have positioned themselves. So I think that has to be taken into consideration too. You can't just go, oh, you know, the evangelical church is just compromised and they're, you know, a tool of the Republican Party, and, you know, it throw the label out completely.
So what are you saying in that?
What I'm saying is that this is much more complex than I guess what I'm trying to do here, Bob, is maybe somewhat validate that if we are going to keep this term, we need to be clear about what's happening and why,
yeah, but
the baggage has been put,
right,
on.
That's what's funny is I feel like, well, I would have to do that in regardless of which term we're talking about. Even if we're talking about the term Christian, mm-hmm, right, I have to still define what I mean by that.
Right.
If we're talking about the term Bible believing, I have to define, like, there's not a word I can grab that everybody in my circle of influence is going to go, oh, okay, I have a right understanding of that, especially when it comes to my convictions about God and about life, because there's just no, our culture has become so fragmented in terms of people's convictions on these things that it's not like everybody shares a definition of what a Christian is, or what a Bible-believing Christian is, or what a gospel-centered Christian is, or what an evangelical is. there's not a term that I don't have to further define. So I'm just saying, so the fact that I have to further define evangelical to say not, you know, rah-rah Trump, okay, well, I'm going to have to do that regardless of what word you give me.
So, but then isn't that, hey, I have five labels that all of them are imprecise, and so why not jettison three or four of them and
yeah,
just
well,
have one?
Great. Well, give me the one. That's what I'm saying. Like, until somebody gives me what the one is, I'm happy with Christian, and I like just saying, here's what I mean by that. Here's what that historically connects to.
And you raise a good point. Other parts of the world, Christian's enough.
Right.
And mm-hmm. the U.S.,
sure.
it seems to be, this is a particularly U.S. and maybe to some degree Western Europe problem, but definitely a U.S. problem where we have, you know, a word is so imprecise because we have 15, you know, layers of meaning for every Christian label you have.
Yeah.
So.
Which is how this, like, why did pollsters in 1976 begin using this term? Because Jimmy Carter claiming to be a born-again Christian from the state of Georgia was different than John F. Kennedy claiming to be a Christian because he was Catholic, right? Like mm-hmm. that you have a whole background of what do people's religious affiliations mean? Every president in the history of America has been a quote unquote Christian. Like we've never had an atheist president, but obviously they have very different ways of what living that out and of what that means to them. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, in the American context, there has become this more and more sort of subdividing categories according to what do you mean when you say a Christian?
So I'm gonna go back to your point of trying to rescue the term or fight for the term.
Yeah, I'm not sure we can rescue it. So let's just say fight for it.
Fight for the term. How, on what ground are you going to fight? Like, how are you going to rally people or
Twitter,
purify the term? I don't know.
This podcast, Chris, more, this thing's going to win.
Not necessarily platform, but more, is it by, hey, we just need to strongly emphasize the theological underpinnings and then allow flexibility everywhere else, or how do you sort of what ground do you stand on? I guess
in the simplest answer, I think I would say I am an evangelical in my theological convictions, which is different from how the word evangelical plays out in the political sphere. Here's what's interesting to me is Ross Douthat in the New York Times, who's a conservative Catholic, so he's not in our tribe, but he's friendly to Christian convictions. He identifies basically two evangelicalisms, and I'm quoting from an article he wrote November 25th, 2017. Here's what he says. He basically says there are two groups of evangelicals. There is, quote, a winsome and multi-ethnic evangelicalism envisioned by the anti-Trump Southern Baptist Russell Moore. Okay, that's my tribe. It's the winsome, multi-ethnic Russell Moore. That's, okay. And he says, then there is the nationalist evangelicalism of a Jerry Falwell Jr. or Robert Jeffress. Okay. Not so much my tribe, although I would say like they're the crazy uncle. Like I'm not going to dissociate. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to say like, no, those guys are on a totally different team. I'm saying, yeah, I do not agree with how those guys understand evangelical convictions to connect to our political convictions. I think they're wrong. But if they want to call themselves evangelicals, I can't deny them that term. So that's what I'm saying, is Douthat's saying there's sort of two tribes lining up here. There's the Russell Moore tribe and there's the Jerry Falwell Jr. tribe. These guys are both, they both would claim the term evangelical, but they're very different in how that takes shape. One is a very nationalist. One is very multi-ethnic, winsome, sort of anti-Trumpish. And so I think the reason I appreciate a guy like Russell Moore is because I think he's fighting for, here's a theological conviction of what the gospel is. Therefore, here's what that should mean for us, you know? And he's trying to articulate in public policy, that should mean certain things. Again, is that a winning argument? I don't know. Maybe at the end of the day, we just give the term evangelical to Jerry Falwell Jr. and Robert Jeffress and we do something else. It's just, I keep coming back to the, I don't know what the something else is, especially in North America. I'm saying mm-hmm. if we were somewhere else in the world, I'd be great saying, you know, if we were in Nigeria where everything is prosperity gospel, right? Now I have a different problem. Now, if I call myself Christian, you assume I mean prosperity gospel church, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so I have to redefine, you know, what I mean by gospel believing, right? Maybe reformed is a better term in that context. I don't know. But so just every culture has these weird things that happen with what it means to be a Christian in that culture that you sort of have to parse out using various language.
The racial aspect of this too, it's, you know, you point out with mm-hmm. that article, the multi kind of multi-ethnic, multi-ethnic evangelicalism. What's interesting, and I was listening to a podcast recently with a number of, it was several African-American guys that I follow on Twitter and listen to their podcast, and they were just talking about, it was them and a couple African-American women talking about being in churches with what you would consider evangelical convictions, but they said, I didn't even have this category of evangelical, like growing up, like they didn't see themselves as part of this evangelical world, largely because of the politics, mm-hmm. and largely because of what they saw as, when they became aware of this term, the alignment with the Republican Party specifically and a largely white kind of church. So that's where it gets interesting to me too, is if we're going to paint with the theological convictions, which really do encompass a broad spectrum of
right.
churches.
Right.
Everything from, you know, a Lutheran, a Presbyterian, all the way to, in some ways, a prosperity gospel right. or charismatic. But can evangelicalism really embrace that wide of a scope, like Russell Moore would envision? That's because of the politics. I just don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
It should. Theoretically, I think, and theologically, it could. It could. And so if there was a way to jettison the politics from if we were to cut the baggage away from that, then I think...
Which we can't, right? That's the problem, is we'll right, never be right. able to do that.
Right.
They've taken the term.
Well, but that's what I want to suggest. Is like, I'm not sure they've taken the term. I am sure we'll never be able to cut the political associations away from the term, because pollsters are going to continue using it, and CNN is going to continue using it, and every time there's a presidential election, everybody's going to say, who did the white evangelicals vote for? Like, that's just going to become a trope now that gets used in national conversation. And so there's no way of dialing back the clock on that. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm suggesting, I'm willing to say I'm an evangelical, but not that kind of evangelical. Like, I'm just willing to say, I think there's a theological meaning of the term evangelical, and I want to fight for that. And I want to give away and say, yeah, that's not whatever the media says it is. That's not the kind of evangelical I am. I am the word evangel, is the Greek word for good news, and that's the kind of Christian I am. I believe in the good news of Jesus. And
but you just said that's the kind of Christian I am.
Right.
So you're willing to give away that part of the term, but now you have to define yourself by what you aren't.
Mm-hmm. Which all of us have to do anyway. I mean, that's
in every conversation.
Yeah, yeah. You're always defining yourself a little bit by what you're not. Right.
So even if I said
I'm politically conservative, I have to say, but not like them and not like them and not like that. I mean, like I don't know that there's a socially broad term you can use in America. Right. I'm a hipster, but not like those hipsters. Like, you know what I mean? I get my hair cut at the Beard in Maine, but I'm not a weirdo.
Sold out.
Right. You know, like, yeah. I mean, just whatever. Pick a term. Right. I just don't know that there's a term that you don't have to nuance a little bit. That's just the reality of the world we live in.
Yeah.
Guys, I'm an idealist. So what would the world look like if we weren't calling ourselves anything, but people actually called us by what they saw in us, by our actions? So maybe we've earned the term evangelical and the meaning that everybody's given it because evangelicals haven't lived up to how they thought they were defining evangelical.
Which is certainly true. That's what I'm saying. Like, we certainly, our tribe certainly has blame to bear here for mm-hmm. how the term has become
sure.
used.
Yeah.
And it largely does relate to where we've lined up politically over time.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge for me is, I think there's good and bad in that. Like you, Chris, I'm like, I'm 100% pro-life and I'll never apologize for that. And I just don't see a party platform that really lines up well with that outside of the Republican Party of 40 years ago. I don't like, you know, but within that party now, I would say that's like, I wouldn't line myself up there anymore. I changed my party affiliation 4 years ago for that reason. So like, do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So there's this sense of, there's a reason why we've gotten painted into the corner that we are, that we have to own. But I also don't know how to not get painted in that corner. Like, I'm just saying the way history has gone, and the things we've tried to fight for socially over the past 30 or 40 years, it feels challenging to know. I mean, you know, the I think the 2016 election is the one that sort of put the nail in the coffin for the word because of how people like Robert Jeffress, Jerry Falwell Jr., and others so vocally supported a man like Trump that so many of us had a hard time mm-hmm. seeing as a viable representative of any kind of Christian worldview.
Yeah.
And yet, evangelicalism in America has always had a little bit of that sort of hardcore pragmatism mm. that just says this. I mean, and I don't actually think that's specific. I feel like people are a little bit historically naive to imagine that that's unique. Mm-hmm. Because I would just say, like, you dial back the clock to when Charles V is emperor of the Holy Roman Empire, everybody in Europe has the same problem, right? Of just like, how do we, or, you know, back to King Charles or King James in England, right? Like, mm-hmm. how do we line up behind this ruler in ways that further our opportunities in this particular society while also not agreeing with who this person is and how they, that tension has always been there. That's called living in a fallen world. And I don't know, I lament how many evangelicals lined up in the 2016 election, but I also wonder if our sort of alarm at that is a picture of the sort of relative ease that we've lived in for the last few hundred years in the West, where it's just sort of like, oh, when our society was quote unquote Christian, we could just sort of assume that everybody kind of valued the same sorts of things, and whether they were born again or not, at least they're not going to be a, you know, outright adulterer, moral equivocator, you know, tweet about nuclear war. I mean, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. So one of the arguments for jettisoning this term is because of the damage it does, right, to our witness. Is that?
Yes. What? For sure.
And
for sure.
So, is there a way to keep the term, and is what you're suggesting, Bob, the way you want to address this is keeping the term, but at the same time addressing and owning and acknowledging that this is, there is some problematic aspects to this, and we have to own that, but how can we tweak this thing in order to maybe clarify some things or...
Yeah, I guess let me try a different angle on this and just see if this helps, Chris. I think what I'm suggesting is that the term evangelical in the American context right now, we have to do the same, we have to treat it the same way that we treat the term Christian in 2000 years of history, right? So if you're going to say I'm a Christian, you have to tell me, are you an Eastern Orthodox Christian, a Roman Catholic Christian, or a Protestant Christian? Then if you're a Protestant, you're going to have to tell me, where do you, are you mm-hmm. Lutheran? Are you, like, where's that all line up? So I just think, like, when I say I'm a Christian, I acknowledge, like, for instance, with my Roman Catholic friends, there's a certain shared history that we share. Mm-hmm. There's also places where we are just divergently different and where I would say, like, I absolutely will not acknowledge prayer to saints or Mary as the co-redemptress of the world. I'm just not going there, but I love you. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. so we're sort of on the same team, but in certain areas, we're definitely not. When those are theological, like Mary or saints, that seems like such an easy thing for us to embrace because we just realize, okay, well, I have theological convictions about this. For some reason, when those become more sociopolitical, it feels to us a little funnier. Like, mm-hmm. Is it still okay to say, I'm an evangelical and Robert Jeffress is an evangelical, but I absolutely disagree with him on how those convictions should play out in politics? Mm-hmm. See, and that's the challenge is... I don't want to let the term evangelical become a sheerly political term. I want to argue for, there's a shared history of this. There's a reason why Robert Jeffress and me would both claim the term evangelical, because we actually do stand in a stream in the American church experience that goes back through Billy Graham and Carl Henry and back to the 1920s and all the way back to the Puritans, right? So we share that stream. Where he's gone with that stream and where I'm standing in that stream are different. And I think incommensurate and incompatible. So I'm going to fight for, here's why I want to claim that term, and here's what I mean by it. I'm not necessarily willing to give him that term in the same way. But again, mm-hmm. I'm having this whole conversation realizing, like, I may look back on this podcast in 2 years and be like, well, that was a dumb argument. I just didn't work, you know. but it feels to me like this has gotten so much light and heat after the election of Trump that everybody's sort of freaking out about it. And I sort of want to say, I'm not sure the debate over it, is the term evangelical right term or not, looks the same with the heat taken off of it from Trump. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And in the same way that, like, back in the year 2001, everybody's like, are you emergent? I'm like, well, that word's not going to exist in 10 years, so I don't really care. Right, like, that, you know, but I mean, that was a huge deal back then. Yeah. It was sort of like, are you, like, postmodern emergent? Is that, like, your tribe? Well, let's just give it a decade and see where that lands us, you know? Like, I don't know.
So, basically, you would be fighting for, or, you know, just to keep going back to the same conversation, really, it depends on the character of the people that we're talking with when it comes to are we evangelical
right.
or not. And so, like, that's why when we consider the election of 2016, we're like, well, maybe not, because the character looks a lot different.
Yes. And I would just say, like, even my friend down the street is going to try to label me a white evangelical because I am white and I am an evangelical. Right. And yet I'm going to say, yeah, but what the pollsters mean by that term, when they say 80% of white evangelicals voted for Trump, I'm just going to say, yeah, that's not actually my tribe. Like, what they mean by that tribe is different than what I mean by that tribe, even though we're using the same words, mm-hmm. because they've captured the phrase white evangelical. And that means, in political parlance, someone who's a rabid Trump supporter, who's very pro-Trump, and who has a serious sort of maybe racist undertone to their whole existence. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say, well, that's not who I am, nor is that who I think an evangelical is. And right. I think there are lots of evangelicals who happen to be white who aren't that. Mm-hmm. So that's where it becomes fuzzy to me. It's just like, I understand what the political people are trying to do with that particular brand. If you're a white evangelical, here's what that means. Mm-hmm. I'm just not willing to give that ground, because it feels to me like we're letting them take a term that's our term, you know, mm-hmm. that we invented to describe what are our convictions.
Well, what inevitably will happen is, if everybody decides to jettison it, it's going to become a pejorative term.
Right, exactly.
Like fundamentalist.
So, exactly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We jettison it and it becomes, hey, you're an evangelical.
Yes.
Which is, but then it becomes interesting, like, well, what do you want me to say to that? Like, do I believe in the authority of Scripture? Do I believe that you have to have a relationship with Jesus? You know, conversion, all those things. Okay, yes. You know, you can check off all the boxes until you come to, like you've been saying, the political piece of it. And you're like, well, that's not really me. So then it becomes, well, then what you're saying is the essence of being an evangelical is to be a white,
right.
semi-racist Trump supporter.
Right. Which is...
Then it's like, well, that's no. And so it definitely shows that the baggage has overtaken the actual heart of the meaning of the word. To where they're inseparable now, so I think that's why I struggle with this, and maybe, you know, your heroic cause of trying to rescue the term might be a little
on an island by myself victory. Rescuing the term
alone and your principles.
Ultimately the baggage is just going to end up swallowing the wind is such and the momentum is such that the baggage will end up swallowing it whole. That, you know, you and Russ Moore will be standing on an island surrounded by...
He's a good guy. Know.
What's funny is, if that's true, Chris, I mean, again, I'll be happy. Like, in my mind, this is not a first-level conviction, and so I'll be happy to jettison this term if 5 years from now I just go, yeah, this just isn't... It just doesn't help. But I think what's going to happen is the mainstream media, till I die, is going to be calling me and Russ Moore evangelicals. Even if we abandon that term, they're still going to apply it to us because we believe the Bible, we have convictions about who Jesus is, and that affects how we live. You know what I mean? Since we're going to be called that for the rest of our lives, what good does it do for us to say, well, that's not who we are? I want to say, well, since you're going to call me that, let me show you what that term actually means and not let it be defined for you by CNN. Because they have a very narrow and redefined understanding of what that word means. So if you're going to call me an evangelical, at least let me help you understand what that has meant historically.
Yeah.
And then maybe I can win you over to that's not a pejorative term. Because you're going to call it to me anyway, and you're going to mean it pejoratively.
Yeah. And listeners, whatever you do, don't do the trendy little thing that, I don't know how long ago that was, and say, are you a Christian? No, I'm a Christ follower.
Yes. See there.
just own it. And I agree with you, Bob. Like, if someone were to say, hey, are you an evangelical? I would caveat that, I would not distance myself from that. I'd say in this sense I am, yes.
Right.
Like, if you want to look at the theological convictions in a historical sense, yes. Completely guilty as charged. But if you mean the baggage that it has taken on and kind of the things it's been identified with, especially with Trump, but maybe, you know, we could push that back a few decades. I'd say, well, here's where that's not the case.
Yes. And I think you are tapping into me. There's something in me that likes the fight here, because what
of course.
Exactly. Really? What I want 20 years from now for the word evangelical in America to be defined by me and you and Russ Moore, and for Robert Jeffress and Jerry Falwell to be in the rearview mirror and people are like, I don't know what those guys were, but that's not what an evangelical is. I don't know if that's realistic, yeah. But I just want to say, like, I'm not going to let that term get taken from me by some clowns who I think are ridiculous in how they're...
They need to go find a new term.
Right.
In a sense. No, I like that.
I'm the new Jay Gresham Major.
Yeah, I'll get
it. I'm a Christian. No. You guys find a new term.
Yeah.
I will give you... Let me give you...
That's a good fight.
Historian David Bebbington, who's a British historian. This is his definition of the term evangelical. And by the way, this is a term, or this is a definition respected everywhere from the National Association of Evangelicals to NPR. So everybody quotes David Bebbington. If they're trying to get to like what's a robust definition of evangelicalism, here's his definition. He has four primary characteristics. Number one, it means you believe in conversionism. That is, that you need to be born again, that you need to have a life-transforming encounter with Jesus. Second, activism, the expression and demonstration of the gospel in missionary and social reform efforts. Third, biblicism, a high regard for and obedience to the Bible as the ultimate authority. And fourth, crucicentrism, that is a stress on the sacrifice of Jesus Christ on the cross as making possible the redemption of humanity. So we believe in conversion, we believe in active missionary and social reform efforts, we believe in the Bible, we believe in the cross of Jesus Christ. That to me, if I would feel great talking with a totally liberal neighbor across the street and saying those are the four things I'm going to fight for, is conversion, being active in the world, the Bible, and the cross of Jesus. That defines the convictions that make up my life. And what's interesting, Chris, is I think it's that second one that gives us a chance to sort of recapture the real, because I think what I would say is the reason I'm not willing to let Robert Jeffress and Jerry Falwell Jr. and others in sort of the really, really pro-Trump crowd take the word evangelical is because what I think they're missing is especially what it means for us to love our African-American brothers and sisters in social reform. And so when we have black friends who would call themselves evangelical if it wasn't for how that term has gotten skewed, mm-hmm. who believe these same things that we do, and they're saying, hey, we're concerned about the undertones of what's going on with race right now in America, I want to say, well, part of my conviction is in living out the gospel, I step in to be helpful in that and to fight for the common fellowship that we have in Christ, rather than just to say, well, who cares? We like Trump. You know?
Yeah. And I think for that to happen, it goes back to your point before of owning our mistakes in the past, where in the past, early on, evangelicalism, it was born in largely a white Christian movement.
Yes, true.
And there were times in history where we could have welcomed in our African-American brothers and sisters, and we didn't. And so that created this alienation, even though they shared theological convictions that should have brought them in. And so we have to, so in some ways, maybe to your point, Bob, if we're going to broaden it and the, you know, the Russell Moore view and vision is going to win, we've got to be able to look at where those mistakes were made.
So what as I've been sitting here listening to you guys talk, I've thought of two passages in Scripture. John 13:35, Jesus says, just as I have loved you, you are also to love one another. By this, all people will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. And then we see this kind of played out in at the end of Acts 11, where Barnabas and Saul are in an Antioch, and that's the place where they're first called Christians. They don't call themselves Christians, but they're called Christians by the way they're loving the church, loving the people in that city, loving each other. And so I think that's the call for all of us, is to, yes, we need to define ourselves by distinctives, by evangelical distinctives rooted in Scripture, rooted in, you know, theological beliefs, but also those theological beliefs have to play out in our lives as we interact with people. And then at that time, people will know us by our actions, by what we do.
So you're saying we should just go by whatever people want to call us once they see us?
Maybe. I mean, depending what they say. But like, but like, if Jesus' words are true, they will know you by your love for one another, then let that define me, not just by what I say.
Right. Yeah.
I'm with you.
I think the other practical piece in light of that, Mike, is in addition would be when people are calling you Christian or evangelical, to make sure you're taking that a layer deeper with some courage to have a conversation about who you are and who you're not. Because that wishy-washy definition is really in everybody's mindset.
It also speaks to the importance of connecting with people, mm-hmm. as humans and like interpersonal and not yeah. just as a stat.
Yeah.
And making assumptions.
Well, listeners, at the very least, you now know that I'm going to crusade to redeem the term evangelical from all of its
bad cultural. Can we pick a different word from than other than crusade that has like bad connotations?
Oh, you're right. There's another one that we can't really use anymore. So anyways, I hope this has been fruitful in stirring some thought. Again, like I said at the beginning, this podcast is intended to be a first word, not a last word. And so I would say on this one, I certainly don't know whether the last word is that this word evangelical is recoverable. But I at least want to make the argument that that we should not back away from it, at least in its theological meaning, and that there might still be fruitful reasons why we should hang on to that term, both historically and theologically, while avoiding its current political connotation. So hopefully this has been fruitful for you to listen to. We'll post all the articles that we have referenced in the show notes in case you want to read those. A lot of thoughtful people, Alan Jacobs and Ross Douthat and Ed Stetzer and others commenting on various aspects of this discussion. So hopefully you'll find those fruitful reading as well.
Well, that's going to do it for today's conversation. We hope that you join us next month on February 7th and send us your topic suggestions, podcast@cdomaha.com. And we'll talk to you again then on the Wednesday Conversation.